Pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
Listen, we talking about practice.
They peed on the dude's rug.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show, and welcome to our Mid-South recap episode. That raucous crowd you heard in the intro was not cheering winners across the finish line. They were cheering the last place finisher, the DFL winner, if you will, across the finish line. Beth McBride crossed the finish in the pitch dark at 12:30 a.m. in downtown Stillwater, Oklahoma, and it was a party. It was awesome. This is one of the reasons that I continue to come back to this event each and every year. It's a special one to win, but it's even more special to attend every year, and does as good a job as any race that I've ever been to at celebrating the entire field. And I've wanted to have the last place finisher, the DFL winner, on as a guest for several years now, and I'm so glad that we finally got to do it. So that'll be the second part of today's episode, is an interview with Beth McBride. A big thanks to her for being game, for joining us today, and a huge congratulations. The first part, though, is our more traditional montage, all of the voice memos that you participants and podcast listeners sent in about your own experiences. Quite a few of you this week. So thank you so much for engaging, putting in that little bit of work for all of us to enjoy. This is one of my absolute favorite parts of our recap episodes. And it's one of the favorite parts of a dear partner of mine, 1UP USA, who makes the best bike racks in the world. I have one on my car. Nicole has one on hers, and they're just awesome. Easy installation, lifetime warranty, made in the USA, free shipping on most orders. If you want to find out more, you can go to 1UP-USA.com. Big thanks to them for supporting this episode. And last thing, I don't talk too much about my race in this episode. Actually, I don't think I do at all. For those of you that know on social, you know that I had a mechanical issue right towards the end. The race was going pretty well. But if you would like to see some behind the scenes of the last 18 miles when all of the action was going down, we were battling for position in the single track, attacking each other, covering attacks, you can go to my YouTube channel and watch what I'm kind of calling like a visual podcast. I basically recorded the last 40 minutes of the race with a little action camera and just narrate over it, kind of commentate different observations, things I was thinking about during the race. So if you are interested in a little bit of content regarding the pointy end of the race, our podcast won't be covering that this year, but there is a bit of video content on my podcast, or sorry, on my YouTube, if you want to check that out. Anyway, thanks for listening. Catch you after the show.
Hey y'all, this is Morgan from Deep East Texas. My Mid-South 50 was great this year after 100 last year. My nutrition was much more dialed and my flexibility was up, so I was able to park in my aero bars the whole time. My high point was actually the river crossing because I got mixed up in the 100-mile people and figured, let's send it. So I did. If you see someone with a purple like jersey and yellow bibs, that's me. And my low point was after McMurtry because those last few miles are always a slog, though I did set some personal bests in the Red Trail. Next up, I'm moving to Colorado in a couple of weeks, so probably some mountain bike races up there, and then of course coming back to Stillwater for a double next year because I have great friends who do triathlons. I'm gonna train with them. Have a great day, y'all.
Hey, this is Jeff Doyle from Augusta, Maine. I had a fantastic day at the Mid-South doing my first century on a single speed. I'd say my high point was riding Salsa Storm Chaser 3 abreast for about a mile there, a third of the way through the course. Low point, I really didn't have one except maybe having to leave town before I could say goodbye to everybody that I wanted to say goodbye to. And next on my to-do list is to get to Unbound and do one more 200 to get one more finish closer to the 1,000-mile club. Thanks.
This is Buttcrack Jenny from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I had such a blast at the Mid-South this past weekend. I raced at single speed and with a eagle on my helmet. It was so fun. I was such a weirdo, but people were cheering for me, cawing at me, yelling at me, laughing with me or at me. The highlight of the race was ratcheting through the creek crossing, only getting my foot a tiny bit wet, but not a problem because I made it through. And then I was able to use the slip and slide at the Ambrose tent at mile 38 to wash myself up. And it was so fun. Low light, or I guess the only low light, was I got a puncture. I was able to plug it really quick, but then kept on going. And my favorite part was being able to make it to the Salsa Chaise Lounge. And my husband was there, even though he had already gone through and won the single speed category. He came back to get his picture taken since he missed it on the way out. And so we got to take our chaise photo together, which was awesome. Next up for me is putting on the Paris-Roubaix in Hastings, Michigan, hoping to do half as much as fun as Crystal and Bobby and the whole Mid-South team did. And yeah, thanks. Bye.
This is Adam from Iowa. Attended the Mid-South last weekend. It was awesome. The race was good for me. High points was I actually finished the race. Low point was my RFID tracker didn't track my time, so I didn't have an official time, but I still finished. I'm looking forward to next year, trying to compete the 100 in less time than I did this year.
Hello, this is Hunter from Connecticut. This was my first Mid-South gravel race, and it lived up to every expectation that I had. It was absolutely incredible. My high points were the fun aid station stops and meeting you, Payson, on one of those pre-rides we had. No big low points. I would just say the back half of the ride, you started to feel every rut in the road. But totally worth it to get your Bobby hug at the end. Next, I am looking forward to Xterra, New Jersey at the end of April, so shifting focus a bit to do a triathlon block.
Hi, this is Steven from St. Louis, Missouri. Just want to talk a little bit about my Mid-South experience. What an incredible, beautiful day it was. What beautiful red dirt roads we got to ride on. My biggest highlight of the whole event is that it completely lives up to the hype. This is something I learned about from your podcast. It's the most inclusive, heartwarming, community-driven gravel event I've been to so far. And at the end of the event, after being so exhausted, my wife told me I'm going to be a dad again, which is incredible. The only low point is Stillwater. We got to get you some more restaurants. That's really it. Thank you.
Hey, Payson. This is Dawson from Placidas, New Mexico, and I raced the Mid-South double. The low point was definitely the last 5 or 6 miles of the run. Just absolutely brutal. High point was definitely the Scratcherita Marg shots that the Ombros guys were handing out at the aid station. Next, I'm looking forward to a bike trip down in Patagonia, Arizona this fall.
Hey, Payson. This is Brian from Portland, Oregon. I did Mid-South over the weekend. The race was pretty good, very long. I'll start with the low point. The low point, I only got 2 hours of sleep. Wasn't mentally and physically just going crazy the last couple days before the race. But thankfully, the high point being I finished, made it to Perry, and that entire community was giving me the best vibes to finish the next 50. It was a lovely time. There's no better event than Mid-South. Truly what Bobby and the district crew and the Stillwater community puts on is one of the best things I've ever seen. Next, I'm looking forward to race-wise, SBT. And then, who knows, maybe in May, I go back home to Alaska to visit my parents and bring the bike and get into some trouble there.
Hey, this is Mark Wilson out of Highland Park, Illinois, riding for Half Acre Cycling. Well, my race was going pretty well up until about mile 73, and I hit some sand on a descent and ended up crashing myself out of the race. Event was pretty good other than that. High points, rolling out to Bulls on Parade, played by a brass band. All the energy at the event. I love it. And honestly, heading back to the finish line after getting checked out at the ER to cheer my face off at all the riders coming in. Next, I'm looking forward to doing some training, building up to Day Across Minnesota in August. Made an attempt a couple years ago, didn't make it the whole way. I'm going to do the whole thing, 242 miles this year.
This is Bethany Bruner from Duluth, Minnesota. My race was invigorating. One of my high points was learning what it's like to ride with people from my community. My low points were body dysmorphia and sensory struggles. I look forward to Garmin Gravel Worlds in August.
This is Kevin from Winona, Minnesota. How was my race? It was great. I got to meet some really cool people out there. Some of the high points were definitely the people. I got to meet great people at the Oasises. I started off nice and slow. I hit my goal of taking it nice and easy on the party pace and getting to meet some really cool people. I got to meet Marley Blonsky, All Bodies on Bikes crew. And as I progressed through the peloton, I got to meet some really cool riders, including a gentleman that really helped me through that last stretch. As I was really not looking forward to it. The lowest point for me was definitely after the single track. I definitely took a big hit on my tire. I was really worried I had cracked the rim. It came out okay. But in the end, I had a great gentleman help me out, get to the very end of this thing, and got a big Bobby hug. Next thing I'm looking forward to the most is, of course, local here in Winona, Minnesota, is the Hot Dish 100 with Chase Wark. And then after that, of course, is Gravel Worlds.
Hello, Payson. My name is Darren. I am from Andover, Kansas. My wife Lisa and I went down to Mid-South for the very first time this year. I did the 50 mile. She did the 12 mile. It was great. Very hilly, but I survived. It was awesome at the finish line. And I think the scariest part, if there was a scary part, was probably the single track. But anyway, it was a great experience, and we'll be back.
Hi, this is Sarah from right outside of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. This was my second year doing the Mid-South. The weather was perfect. The course was perfect. My high point was gaining the confidence this year to start mid-pack. It was a really fast start. Really no low points. It was awesome to see my friends at the finish and, of course, get the iconic Bobby hug. What's up next for me is the Oregon Gravel Stage Race, Oregon Trail Gravel Stage Race. And, yeah, Mid-South is the best bike party there is.
Hey, Payson. It's John Nemeth from Los Angeles. This was my fifth year doing the double. What started off as a dodge to get around the lottery, because nobody ever wanted to do the double, has turned into a passion. This year was not meant to be. Life got in the way, moved from Kansas City to LA, not as many training runs, beautiful mountains, came in underprepared. My theme this year was couch to Mid-South double, and just wanted to take it in and have a great time and finish. Thought a lot about comments that have been made about honoring the race and honoring the event and the energy that Bobby puts into it, and just did my best day. Went from a seventh place double finish last year to about a 50th double finish this year, but it was amazing. The course was amazing. The cow path diverge was amazing. People gathered at the creek crossing was amazing. The scenery, the stops, just the whole event, just it's as hard as it was and as sore as my legs are sitting here this morning in Philadelphia, I'm going to be back again and do it just because there's something that red dirt just keeps drawing me back.
So, Beth, I think you're in Wisconsin. You're at your house. Sounds like you work from home. And it looks like a beautiful house with a nice big window that I can see lots of snow through. So maybe give us a quick lay of the land. Where are you located? Where are you joining us from? And it looks like your weather is a little bit different than it was in Stillwater.
Definitely. Yeah, so I live in Lake Mills, Wisconsin, pretty close to Madison. And I'm about 45 minutes east of Madison. And actually, Lake Mills is close to Waterloo, Wisconsin, and Waterloo is the home of Trek. So
yep.
We have a lot of Trek folks who live in Lake Mills and bike back and forth constantly. So, yep, it's just cool. Down the road from us. Yeah. So definitely a Trek town.
Do you ride a Trek?
I used to have a Trek. I used to have a Damani, but then I have different bikes now. Okay. I got rid of
what do you that would be a fun first question before we dig into your big ride. What bikes are you on these days, if there's multiple?
Yeah, so I actually have three bikes. The bike I rode for Mid-South was a Salsa Cutthroat, and I love that bike more than anything. I call it my chariot. It's the most amazing bike. And then I have a fat tire bike. I ride a Trek Farley. And then I have a road bike, which is a Canyon Enduro Ace.
Love it. Okay, so I want to get to know your background, how you got into cycling, how you prepared for this event, all that sort of thing, in a little bit. I also know that you're a member of a Wisconsin Native tribe, which I'm really curious about too. But I think what everyone wants to hear about first and foremost is the big ride. We recorded audio from both your finish and the winner's finish.
Oh, nice.
And it is staggering how much louder and more energy there is for your finish as opposed to the winner, which says a lot about Mid-South and I think gravel as a whole. So I'm so excited to hear about your experience. And I think the first thing I'd like to dive into before we get into why you decided to do this and all that sort of thing is you mentioned before we started recording that you've really been processing a lot the last few days.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's been pretty emotional. Can you describe, we're going to kind of do it backwards here, but can you describe the experience of finishing?
So I think I'm going to tear up and I told you it was trying not to, but I'm going to really hold it back. But, you know, I felt like I knew I was going to finish. I mean, there definitely were a few dark moments for me where I just had to kind of dig deep. But being able to cross that finish line, I think just was like this moment that I'm never going to forget, right? Being able to say that I finally did a century ride, was just amazing. And it was like those last couple miles, right? Coming into Stillwater at 12 o'clock in the morning, that I just knew that I finally was going to finish a century at Mid-South. And that I just started crying and I couldn't stop crying. And I know as I finished and came across that finish line, I know I was just sobbing. All the photos I've seen of me, they're all like, they look like I'm just like torn apart, but yeah. I just couldn't stop crying because I just felt like, you know, I've been told a lot, right? Like, you can't do that. Or you look a certain way. You're a fat cyclist. You can't do this. You don't have the endurance. You don't have the tenacity. But I do. And that's what I felt at that moment, that I just did that, right? And so many people have said, you can't do that. And I did.
It was a lot of proving people wrong.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who's told you that you can't do it?
Oh, just a lot of people, right? Nobody in my immediate circle, right? I have a lot of great folks, friends and family. But just you think about just, you know, the bike industry, bike shops, you know, people when I'm out riding, you know, the comments that are made. So I think that's tough, right, to handle that. So I kind of keep that, I bury that inside, but, you know, it's always in the back of my mind, right, of, you know, I'm not supposed to be able to do this. So granted, I wasn't fast by any means, and I know that. I feel bad for keeping you all awake so late, right? But
it was an honor. I mean, and that's what I was about to say is for all the people who told you you couldn't do it, all of the people waiting at the finish had a complete polar opposite attitude. And I'd actually never been at the DFL party. And it felt like it was kind of funny because everyone's partying, there's music going on, but everyone's just sort of lined up right up to the finish line arch. And eventually people inevitably start kind of spilling over the finish line. And there's this struggle to get people to like come back on the finish line side of the finish so that you can actually cross the finish line. And it was crazy. It was like fans at a concert, like just reaching for the performer, you know, and they just wanted to get a little closer. And just the anticipation of you finishing was really significant. But what I'm really curious about is how it felt to enter that environment after however many hours, 16 hours or whatever it was of whatever it is you went through.
I was not expecting that. I mean, I knew there was something that was going to happen at the end, but I had no idea like the intensity and the number of people that were going to be there, you know, the champagne spraying, I was really overcome with emotion, right? Like they're here to celebrate the back of the pack, you know, mm-hmm. and we don't always get that, you know, it's like, we're slow, we're at the back, but to have that was just overwhelming.
Yeah.
And really meaningful. And I felt really honored, and I still feel really honored. I'm trying not to cry.
Well, and you know, what's funny too, is I don't think it's really fun that there is that celebration of the last place finisher, but I don't really think of it as the last place finisher. You are a finisher. And I think that's mm-hmm. what's being celebrated because there are a lot of people who lined up and didn't finish. Yeah. And so you're among a community of people that did a really, really hard thing that day, and you succeeded in your goal. And I think that's what's being celebrated above everything else. At least that's what it seems like from my perspective.
And also, I mean, it made me think about, I mean, I'm just one person, right, who crossed the finish line. I just happened to be last, but there's so many amazing stories of mm-hmm. people crossing the finish line and, you know, the obstacles they've had in doing that and just their tenacity and the challenges. And I love hearing those stories, right? We're just everyday people, you know, we just like riding bikes and, you know, just the sacrifice and the things that some of these folks have gone through to get to that point. So I just love hearing all of these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I'm curious if it felt like a little much when you crossed the finish line at any level, because it was I have to assume a very different energy level and perspective to the introspection that you probably were going through much of the day. I mean, there was a disco ball when it rolled across midnight. It was St. Patty's Day, so there were green lights. There were literally like smoke machine jet things shooting out of the top of the finish arch. People were in costumes. That is, in a way, it's kind of like the antithesis of what I think you probably were feeling a lot in the previous hours. Did it feel like too much?
No, I don't think it was too much. I was definitely overwhelmed. Like, who are these people? What's happening? Right. And I know Marley was like trying to, like, she said she felt like a mom trying to protect me. Right. So, I mean, it was overwhelming, but in an amazing way. And part of me was like, what do I do? Who do I go to? You know, because everybody was like, come here, do this, do that. But it was fine. It was good. I just feel bad that I couldn't stop crying, right? I mean, I really was happy. I just was so overcome with emotion.
Yeah, of course.
It was hard to kind of switch that over, so.
Yeah. How exhausted were you?
I felt okay because I think I was just so, like, hyped up.
Yeah.
It wasn't until we got back to, you know, the place we were staying at where I was like, oh, I feel the tiredness, you know, I feel it. And then, you know, I had to get up and ride. I had to do my ride the next morning. I'll talk about that as well. So I only had like 4 hours of sleep, if that, on Saturday night going into Sunday morning. And then I was up again and on my bike again. So.
Oh, my gosh. Talk to me about... So. You just used an interesting phrase there. You said you had a ride that you had to do. Explain that.
I did. So on January 1st, I started a challenge with Kevin Frias. Kev does Instagram. It was just, you know, a challenge to get people out on their bikes riding. And the challenge is, you know, you pay in a little bit of money and whoever wins the challenge, that money goes to a charity of your choice. And the challenge is whoever can ride at least 10 miles a day for the most consecutive days wins. And the challenge started with maybe 20 or 30 people. And then slowly they started to, you know, drop out of the challenge. So it's down to me and one other person. That person took fifth place, I think, at Mid-South in the non-binary. I think it was fifth place. So it's just that person and me now riding. And I'm like, I'm not going to lose this challenge. So I think, what day are we on? 70, 79 or something like that. So
no
since
way.
January 1st, I've rode every day, at least 10 miles.
No way.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Okay, so where can people, do you upload to Strava?
I do upload to Strava, yep.
Okay, so people can follow this on Strava.
Yeah,
are you
sure.
just at Beth McBride on Strava?
I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where else can people follow this? This is one of the coolest things I've heard about in a while.
I don't know what Kevin's Strava name is, but he has a club. I mean, it's something I could link, give you the link to, but
sure.
Yeah. So we'll there's only the two of us left.
Wow.
And that person and I have been joking. We're like, you know, once we, you know, crested over day 60, both of us knew we weren't going to give up.
Oh,
so
boy.
The joke is that we're going to ride this challenge into Mid-South 2025.
Oh, dang.
So, I know. So I'm like, all right. But I think that helped me a lot, right? Stay consistent with being able to ride the way I needed to ride to actually finish at Mid-South. And there are days where I eke out the 10 miles and that's all I can do.
Yeah.
But definitely, I mean, I have training days in there too. But yeah, it's helped me stay consistent for sure.
No kidding.
And it's like, it's just built in as part of my day. How am I going to get these miles in? And I had COVID twice since January, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
I rode through COVID. I wouldn't recommend it, but I still did it, you know, to get my miles in. And
yeah, just took it really easy.
Yeah. Traveling hockey family. So I've just found ways, like when we're out of town, to like take my bike and get a ride in wherever I am. So, yeah.
That's incredible.
So, yeah.
Do you have a, I mean, this might be a silly question because, you know, you're a mother and I know you have a career and obviously those things take an enormous amount of dedication, but have you ever tackled anything like this where there's a set goal that has a certain metric around it every single day?
No, never.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. Do you, it sounds like you kind of have, you're competitive. Like you've got your,
just a little bit. Yeah. I am competitive.
You got
so
the
I always say I'm not,
teeth.
But I think I am. I am.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I definitely can't lose this challenge.
So how did you tell me about today's ride? Were you on the fat bike or can you ride inside?
Today I did not ride yet. I'm going to ride later tonight. But my cutthroat is actually at the bike shop. It needed some love after Mid-South. So I'm going to ride outside on the fat bike. I
at
rode
night.
Outside. Yeah.
With
yeah,
lights.
And that's something... Yeah, with light. So that's something else I want to bring up because at Mid-South, you know, we were out there a long time, right? And it got dark. And
yeah.
I really have been petrified about riding at night in the dark. And those roads in Stillwater are dark and quiet and kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And I was really worried about my battery power. So I turned off. Well, I didn't turn my headlight off completely, but I took it to the lowest setting and then I had my head unit where I couldn't see anything.
Uh-huh.
And I think for me, that was like a big thing that, not that I overcame it, but I did and I had to get through it. I was really scared and I couldn't see right where I was biking. I couldn't see like obstacles, but
especially
I did
with those ruts. I mean, those ruts,
I know.
It's funny because I didn't know who you were at the time, but I knew that there was a rider making their way towards us. And one of the thoughts that kept occurring to me was those ruts and how the shadows must have just been really dicey.
Yeah. I just have never been a person that, you know, can ride outside at night. I just have too many worries. But this week, you know, I'm like, well, I have to ride. And the only time I can get my rides in are at night. So this is a cakewalk compared to what I did at Mid-South riding, you know, in the darkness. So.
So will you... ride on road? Like what are the road conditions today? I mean, it looks like a lot of snow behind you.
Yeah, it actually looks fine out there. I'll probably go on the trail though. We live fairly close to a state trail. So I'll do that or I'll just do the roads around here. So
10 miles of trail in the dark. You're a killer. This is awesome.
I'm going to do it.
I love it.
I'm telling you, like, I never thought I could do that. And then, like I said, Mid-South, I'm like, okay, I just did that. And there's no reason why I can't continue to do that. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to hear about future goals here in a minute, but two questions about Mid-South. How was the single track first?
Yeah, so I don't know how to ride single track. I would love to learn. I need some help there. So I actually ended up walking that just because I don't have the skills, right? I just have never really done single track. So it's something I'd love to work on this year to get some confidence and some skills. And, you know, I was also riding with somebody else. We can talk about that for a number of miles. But, you know, both of us had our headlights, right, really low. And we're both like, this is sketchy. We can't ride it even if we tried. But I have to tell you that Crystal came with like some big lantern and like walked with us. We ended up just walking most of it, but just illuminated the trail for us so that we could see. So that was
and
really
this is
like
Crystal, partner of Bobby Wintle.
Yes. Yep. So that was really amazing that she did that for us, you know, just to get us through there. So, and an armadillo ran across. I've never seen an armadillo in the wild. Cool. So that was really neat. I love that. So I feel like, awesome. I have no single track skills. It's something I absolutely have to work on.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about a moment during the race that was, doesn't have to be the most challenging, but was a very challenging moment and maybe gave you some doubt about whether you could complete the ride.
It definitely was hitting nighttime. That was the biggest and hardest challenge for me. I was really nervous. I was really scared. I had to take a I stopped and just had to take a moment to just collect myself and tell myself, you know, I've come this far. I can definitely do this. You know, I just had to overcome just being terrified of the darkness.
Yeah.
So it was dark. It was really dark.
And when, so I know I think you sort of finished with some sort of companion. At what point did you join up with this other rider?
So I would say we were about 20 miles from the finish and we started leapfrogging quite a bit back and forth. And then she was ahead of me and I'd say maybe like right before the single track, we ended up kind of meeting up again and kind of talking about the fact that, you know, we couldn't see much. So maybe together we would be able to see more of the road. And that definitely helped. And I absolutely need to make sure she gets recognition, right? Because we rode together at that, you know, the last, you know, 10 miles, 15 miles. It's just really important to know that she did an amazing job as well. And I know I finished just slightly behind her, but she definitely deserves, you know, recognition as well.
What was her name?
Elma is her name.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. Was there any conversation about intentionally being the DFL winner?
No, not at all.
You were that just...
I'm like, I'm just out here trying to finish my ride. Just trying to finish. And let's just finish. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good deal. Okay. Talk to me a little bit about why you decided to take on this challenge. I assume this was the biggest bike-related challenge you've tackled so far?
Yeah, on gravel, for sure. I've always wanted to be able to do a gravel century, like in a race, but the problem is, right, I'm slow, so it's hard to find races that are so open-ended with the cutoff time. Yeah. I just have never been able to, you know, really be able to, like, fit my pace into some of these races. So this was my opportunity, and I just wanted to know that I could actually, like, accomplish it. So that's why. And I've heard such great things about Mid-South, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm in. Let's do it at Mid-South. So.
Yeah. So does this give you any inspiration or added confidence to circle some other goals in the future?
Yeah. So I would definitely love to do some longer gravel rides, but I know I have to get faster and stronger to do that. But like Gravel Worlds in Lincoln, I know they have, I think, 150 miles. I'd love to tackle something like that or a 200 mile race for sure. I really like long rides. I like the endurance miles a lot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're certainly in the middle of a decent training camp. It sounds like this self-imposed challenge.
I know it's only 10 miles a day, but.
Consistency is everything though, you know, like it's funny because I have this conversation with people a lot and the common question is, you know, is one big ride a week or two big rides a week better than six medium, small rides a week? And consistency is king for sure.
Yeah, so for sure.
You're going to come out of this. Too. Yeah. You'll come out of this with a lot of gained fitness, I bet.
Yeah. Now I do have a cycling coach and I think I've been a challenge for her because I definitely have had periods where, you know, it's like I let work stress, you know, take over where I can't get on the bike. I have work to do, but I really credit her for like helping me just, you know, come to a place where I'm trying to balance everything. Right. And I really love being on the bike. And I know there was times where, you know, I looked at it as being such a chore, right? Because you know, there's so much of life that goes on, right? And you're always having to balance. But she's worked with me so well to just help me find that balance, keep me motivated, and give me some challenges that sometimes make me cry on the bike, but I know they're good. They're meant to, you know, make me better. So
yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, speaking of work, I think I saw an All Bodies on Bikes post that mentioned you're a treasury analyst. Is that right?
I am. Yep. Corporate treasury analyst. That's right.
So describe that. What does that mean from an actual job description standpoint, but also for your life day to day? Like, what sort of constraints do you have? It sounds like pretty significant constraints if you're knocking out, you know, your 10 miles in the dark and a hockey mom and you've got a lot going on.
Yeah. So as a treasury analyst, I'm working with, I work at a company, we sell financial products to credit unions and some, you know, direct to consumer products as well. So I work with internal business areas, with banks, to just make sure the money's going out the door and coming in the way it should. That's the easiest way to describe it. So, but we're pretty busy right now. We have a really big implementation coming up on April 1st that we've been working on for years. So it's just a busy, busy time right now.
So does that mean you're just completely lost in spreadsheets most of the
day? No spreadsheets. I don't do anything with the actual dollars. I just make sure that the movement of the money is happening.
Gotcha.
Definitely not an accountant.
So how did you get into cycling? How did you pick up a bike? Has this been a long time lifestyle, I guess? I mean, would you call it a lifestyle?
I think now, but it wasn't something that was really part of my life. You know, as a kid growing up right in the city, it just wasn't like athletics. It just wasn't a thing. Right. So, I mean, I rode my bike, but not really. Prior to us having my daughter, I was doing competitive powerlifting, which I absolutely loved. But then, you know, just things change right after we had my daughter. And my husband was an ultra endurance cyclist, road cyclist. So he was into road cycling, long miles. He's like, well, let's start doing cycling together. And, you know, I started off on the road bike, and his idea of fun, right, as a road cyclist versus mine, it just didn't mesh that well, right? So it wasn't something I really enjoyed. But about, I'd say like a year and a half ago, one of my friends was like, hey, you're riding your bike. Why don't you try Gravel Worlds in Lincoln, Nebraska? Just take your road bike and put some 38s on it. It'll be great. So I'm like, all right. Gosh. I was really naive, right? No. So I did the 78-mile course in Lincoln, Nebraska. And that was really petrifying for me, like not having any experience with gravel or chunky or descents. But I loved it, and I felt so accomplished that I just did that with like having zero experience ever being on gravel. I really had no experience. And then at Gravel Worlds, I met Marley Blonsky from All Bodies and Bikes and started following her, got accepted into the All Bodies and Bikes SBT gravel program. And then I just started riding gravel. So, yeah.
So were you at SBT?
I was at SBT.
Was that last year?
Yep. This past August. And
what distance did you do there?
So I signed up for the 100. But when I got there, I was like, there's no way. The altitude just killed me. I still, you know, I went on course to do the 100, and that decision point, right, to go to the, you know, shorter distance or stay with the 100 came really soon. It took me like 15 minutes of sitting there trying to decide what I wanted to do, and a lot of tears because I felt like a failure because I really wanted the 100 and I knew I just couldn't do it. So I did the shorter distance, the 60 or whatever that distance was. So I finished that one, but I still felt really like I didn't meet my goal. So that was a hard one for me.
Man, that's a literal crossroads of a decision. That's really interesting to kind of put myself in your shoes there. By the same token, though, like that had to have been the right decision because it created a stepping stone for this Mid-South Challenge. And I mean, 60 miles at that elevation still that's a huge ride. I mean, that's a big ride.
I think the big thing from that ride though, you know, I felt like a failure myself, but I ended up riding with another rider. She was struggling a bit to kind of get through the miles and we teamed up together. And for me, I think a lot of this too with gravel riding is just the community and like being with other people and encouraging people and helping other people reach their goals. So that was really meaningful for me. The two of us came across the finish line at the same time. And I mean, I helped her, she helped me. So that was the best part, right? Yes, I finished, but I was able to help somebody else along. And that's really important to me. I do have to say though, Allison Tetrick, rode with us like the last 3 miles to kind of like make sure we made it across. And that also was just amazing. Out of the blue, here she is. She's like, I'll help you. You know, I'll get you across the finish line. So
that is
it's just
cool.
The community, right, of people and all these incredible stories and people that I've met. I think that's a real big part of this for me, too.
Yeah, and I really love that story because, the word community and gravel get thrown around in tandem to no end, you know? And I think to an extent it's become a buzzword. And I think it's important that we remember what it actually means. Mm-hmm. And you sharing that story is such an incredible example of, okay, community can look like this. Right. And I don't know, is it fair to say that these experiences are changing your life? I mean, it certainly seems like it's changed your daily routine, if nothing.
Yeah, that too.
By 10 miles, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like I have friends all across the United States now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you're right when you say community is a buzzword, but I feel it. I really feel it deep in my bones, right? Yeah. With gravel, right? And the folks that I've met in. Yeah, and I'm okay with using the buzzword because it is a community. It really is.
So. No, I mean it's a very apt word, and I hope that as a community we continue to share these experiences, whether it's an interview like this or just with a fellow rider, because so much inspiration. Like I'm feeling very inspired by your story right now, and I'm sure many listeners are as well. And I think it's one of the really special things about the bike is you had this incredible experience of finishing Mid-South that you can be very proud of personally, but your story is going to inspire so many others if we talk about it, right? And so I think that's where, we can say the word community, but then there's sort of like some follow-up work of making sure that we're inspiring each other and continuing to cultivate that community. And it seems like the All Bodies on Bikes community has been pretty key for you. And absolutely. So one of the things I wanted to talk about and hear about is how that's the case. Marley, of course, is a well-known name in the cycling world. And I've had her on the podcast before and had a really nice conversation about all of her work and her experience and all that sort of thing. But I'd love to hear from you. You're wearing the shirt. For those that are just listening, you're wearing an All Bodies on Bikes shirt. Talk to me a little bit about the program and what it's been to be a part of. What it's been like to be
absolutely.
A part of.
So obviously my involvement has been a little more personal, right? Because I was part of the All Bodies and Bikes SBT team. This has just been a really pivotal in me being able to get on my bike and ride, accept myself for who I am, right? I mean, I'm a fat cyclist and just knowing that that's okay, right? And having this community of folks that it's not about how you look. It's about you having fun on a bike, enjoying your ride, just riding for the pleasure of riding, whatever that means to you. So that's been really helpful. Absolutely. And the work that Marley is doing, I think is really, important as well. Mm-hmm. Cyclists come from all walks of life, right? From, every corner of the world. And just to celebrate that, I think the joy of riding a bike is what's most important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On that note, do you have any words of wisdom that you would leave someone with that might be listening who's interested in whether it's Mid-South or some other challenge, but is feeling some timidness about whether they can do it or whether they're welcome, whether they would fit in? Any thoughts there to share?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you can do hard things, right? Challenge yourself, and you have to look past like the perception you think other people have of you. Know that you can do what you need to do, right? Just get on a bike and ride. Maybe that's a mile and that's what your body can handle. But just the joy of riding, I don't want people to, you know, miss that, right? And that's what I've loved out of this too, is, you know, just being able to get on a bike, go places that you can't see with your car, be able to meet new people, just do it. You know, you can do amazing things. You set your mind to do it.
Yeah, I love that. And also on that note, I mean, we've talked a lot about goals and accomplishments and that sort of thing, but what is it about riding day to day that you really love?
There's just a sense of freedom, you know, that I can just go wherever I want. And when I ride, I don't listen to music. I try really hard to disconnect, like, you know, my career from being on the bike. I just really try to clear my mind of anything, you know, that would hold me back. And I just love the feeling of just being connected, right, to the earth. That might sound so corny, but it just, it's an amazing feeling, right, of just being out there, you know, feeling myself just grounded and just being present, and being able to enjoy my bike. So
I love that.
Yeah.
That's definitely something I think all bike riders can relate to.
And that's what I felt like too at Mid-South. It was really interesting. I didn't realize how much time had elapsed. I just felt like so happy being out there. And, you know, so many times I'm riding solo because I'm at the back of the pack, and I just have become used to that. And just, I love being able to see like everything that's around me and just to take it all in. That's the best part. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially if you have your bike computer blanked out like that on low battery mode, the way that time on a really long ride can kind of stretch and compress, and you enter this almost timeless sort of parallel universe. I am just so hooked on that. I love that place. And I don't know about you, but for me, the suffering, at least for periods of time, can really become secondary. Mm-hmm. And that exploration of your mind and also the place you are just takes the front seat. But for me, it needs to be a long ride like that to really immerse in that sort of experience.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely felt that at Mid-South. The other thing too, I didn't realize like what time it was. In my mind, I'm like, oh, it's like 10 o'clock at night, right? So it was just when I came across the finish line, everybody said, it's like 12:30. I'm like, wait, what? It's like, how did that happen, right? Yeah, I didn't feel it. So, yeah.
That's cool. All right. Well, the last thing I would like to hear about is, I know you're a member of the Indigenous, and I hope I don't murder the name here, the Indigenous tribe, Bad River Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe?
Ojibwe?
Ojibwe.
You're close. Yes.
Okay.
Good job.
Tell me about that. I know, I can't remember where, but you mentioned Mid-South and Bobby Wintle acknowledging the Indigenous background of the area of Mid-South as being really meaningful to you. Can you talk a little bit about what it means to be part of that community?
Yeah, absolutely. So just, you know, going back to Bobby recognizing and honoring that, I think so often we're on land where, you know, Indigenous people were there, and, you know, we tend to forget about that, and we tend to forget about that history. So that's why I said it just, you know, was really meaningful that was acknowledged. So my family is from northern Wisconsin. So if you were to look that up, it's going to be up way at the top of Wisconsin, close to Lake Superior. Mm-hmm. I did not grow up on the reservation. I grew up as an urban Indian, you know, so that means I've had different experiences, you know, for sure. But it's just been a strong part of our family and, you know, our culture my entire life. I do want to share a really funny kind of biking story, though.
Yeah.
I do have a fear of dogs, just like probably a lot of cyclists do. I've been working on that quite a bit. But I think my fear of dogs came from when I would go visit my grandmother in the summer and ride around the reservation. The res dogs would just chase me all over, and I hated that. So
yeah.
I think, so that's just my funny story about, you know, dogs. Just, you know, they always chase me.
I had one today. I mean, it doesn't feel good because you just never really know what the behavior is actually going to be. You know, sometimes there's interest, sometimes not. Yeah. Can you share something unique about your tribe, something culturally or historically that might be fun?
Yeah. So, the Bad River Band of Chippewa, and actually this is true for a lot of the tribes in northern Wisconsin, wild rice is a really essential piece of our culture. It gets harvested every August, and we call it like Bad River Gold is what we call it.
Because
some years, you know, the harvest is really horrible. Some years the harvest is great. And it's much different than the rice that you would get, like cultivated rice. You know, if you go to the store and buy some wild rice, it's much different than that. So that's a really important piece of our culture is that rice.
How is it different?
It's nuttier. The texture is different. The color is different. It just has a much deeper, you know, richer flavor. So
yeah. Do you cook with it ever? Do you try to?
I do. I don't go ricing, so I rely on my relatives to get the rice for us. Yeah. So sometimes we just have to, like, you know, hold on to it for special occasions. But yes, when we get it, I use it for special occasions. Yeah. So,
well, this was great, Beth. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that comes to mind that you'd like to talk about, or anything you'd like to leave listeners with?
Yeah, I would say just again, like, don't give in to your fears, right? Don't give in to your perceptions of what you think you can or can't do when it comes to the bike. Just get on your bike and start riding. That's the most important thing. You can do it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. And congratulations. It was an honor to watch you roll across the line. Although I didn't get to see much, you were surrounded almost immediately by rabid fans.
All the champagne too. I had to laugh. Did you see me? I had to wipe my eyes because it was burning my eyes. So
awesome. Well, good luck with your 10-mile challenge. I don't envy your current competitor because I've gotten a bit of an idea of how tough you are. But I'm going to be following. That'll be fun to keep an eye on.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity to talk about my experience. I hope it inspires some other folks, like I said, just to get out and start riding.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you to 1UP USA for supporting this episode. You can find out more about their world-class bike racks at 1UP-USA.com. I want to say a big thank you to Lily McKelvin for editing the show. Big thank you to Nicole Baker for producing this one. She's the one that recorded that awesome soundbite from Beth's finish at 12:30 a.m. And I also want to remind you that if you want to check out some in-race video content, you can go to my YouTube channel to watch the visual podcast. I'm sort of cringing at that term, but I don't really know what to call it yet. I think we'll be doing more of them. I recorded the hill climb first stage of the Santovai gravel race, the first race of my year back in Girona, and we'll be doing the same thing for that, so look for that soon. I think we're going to pause the full-length videos of the actual podcast episodes for the moment because I think we need to start a separate YouTube channel. I think it's getting a little too confusing with the Stash House Productions films on there, like Iceland and Tasmania, Trail Town Bentonville, some of these, you know, in-race action cam videos, all of that mixed in with long form interviews. I don't think it totally makes sense. So I think in the near future, we'll be starting a podcast specific YouTube channel to upload the video components of these interviews. So stay tuned for that. Otherwise, you can always stay tuned to the social channel, The Adventure Stash on Instagram, to watch some reels, engage with our Friday quizzes, and just chat with other friends and fans of the show. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.